Have you ever lost something and found it 50 years later? I mean, really lost it. Not your car keys, not your favorite sunglasses. I'm talking about a fighter plane buried under 268 feet of solid ice on the Greenland ice cap. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair because this one is something else. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. All right, July 15, 1942. The United States is 7 months into the war. The Army Air Forces need fighters and bombers in England, and they need them yesterday, so they organize a ferry mission. 6 brand new Lockheed P-38 Lightnings and 2 Boeing B-17 Flying Fortresses take off from a base in Maine, heading east. The plan is to island hop across the North Atlantic, Maine to Labrador, Labrador to Greenland, Greenland to Iceland, Iceland to Scotland, standard ferry route. Thousands of aircraft would make the crossing during the war. But the weather had other ideas. Somewhere over the Greenland ice cap, the formation flew into a wall of weather. Fog, snow, zero visibility. The kind of conditions that swallow airplanes whole. Navigation in 1942 over featureless white ice with no GPS, no moving map, just a compass and dead reckoning. They were lost, fuel was running low, and there was nowhere to go but down. All 8 aircraft made forced landings on the ice cap. Every single crew member survived. That part of the story is a miracle in itself. The P-38's belly landed on the ice. The B-17s set down on their bellies too. Rescue teams eventually reached the crews by dog sled and got them out. But the airplanes, well, the airplanes stayed right where they were, and the ice started to bury them.
See, the Greenland ice cap is not static. It snows, it compresses, and the ice grows. Year after year, foot after foot, those 8 aircraft sank deeper and deeper into frozen silence. By the 1980s, they were under more than 250 feet of ice. Most people had forgotten they were even there. The military wrote them off back in 42. Just another line item in the war, but not everyone forgot. A man named Pat Epps, an airport operator out of Atlanta, Georgia, and a businessman named Richard Taylor got it in their heads that they were going to find those planes and bring one home. Now, a lot of people thought they were out of their minds. 250 feet of ice in Greenland. The logistics alone would bankrupt most operations, but Epps and Taylor formed an outfit called the Greenland Expedition Society and started raising money. The first expeditions in the early 80s were mostly about finding the aircraft. They knew the general area from the old military records, but the ice had moved. The planes weren't directly below where they'd landed anymore. The ice sheet flows slowly, like a frozen river, and it had carried those aircraft with it. The search teams used magnetometers, ground-penetrating radar, anything they could think of to find metal under all that ice. It took years. Several expeditions came up empty or found signals they couldn't confirm. The ice cap is not a friendly workplace. Temperatures drop to 40 below. Storms roll in without warning. Equipment fails. People get frostbite and you're dragging heavy gear across a landscape that looks exactly the same in every direction. White, flat, endless. In 1988, they finally got a solid hit. The radar painted clear shapes under the ice. But here's the thing, and this is where the story takes a turn nobody expected. Those airplanes were not 20 or 30 feet down. They were 268 feet below the surface. 268 feet. That's a 25-story building stacked straight down in solid ice. Now here's where it gets interesting. How do you recover a fighter plane from that depth? You can't dig a hole 268 feet deep in ice. The walls would collapse. You can't blast it. You'd destroy the airplane. So they came up with something nobody had tried before. They called it the Gopher. The Gopher was essentially a thermal melt machine, a copper coil that circulated hot water to melt a shaft straight down through the ice, 4 feet in diameter. They lowered it down, melting inch by inch, foot by foot, pumping the meltwater back to the surface. When they finally reached the aircraft, they had a narrow vertical tunnel descending into darkness with a crushed and frozen P-38 at the bottom. They chose one airplane. The 5th P-38 in the formation. And what they found down there was not a pristine fighter sitting in a frozen hangar. The ice had crushed it. The twin booms were broken. The wings were mangled. The center nacelle was compressed. 50 years of glacial pressure had treated that airplane like a soda can under a boot heel. They had to cut it apart. Piece by piece, section by section, they brought that P-38 up through the shaft. It came out in pieces small enough to fit through a 4-foot-wide hole in the ice. Each piece was tagged, cataloged, hauled to the surface, and eventually shipped back to the United States in 1992. The total weight of what they recovered was about 28,000 pounds of aluminum, steel, and frozen history.
Now, a lot of folks at this point would have looked at that pile of crushed metal and called it a lost cause. This wasn't a restoration project, this was more like archaeology. But a man named Roy Schaffner, a businessman and pilot from Middlesbrough, Kentucky, bought the wreckage and committed to doing the impossible. He was going to make it fly again. The restoration moved to a hangar in Middlesbrough, and a team of fabricators, machinists, and aircraft builders went to work. And I mean serious work. The original skins were mostly useless. The structure had to be rebuilt from scratch in many areas. They used original Lockheed engineering drawings and manufacturing specs to recreate components. Every rib, every spar, every fitting had to either be salvaged and repaired or built new to the original tolerances.
The engines were a story unto themselves. The Allison V1710 inline engines that powered the P-38 had been frozen for half a century. The team tore them down to the last bolt, cleaned every part, replaced what couldn't be saved, and rebuilt them to original spec. If you've ever overhauled a 50-year-old aircraft engine, multiply that headache by about 1,000. These engines had been filled with ice water, compressed by glacial forces, and frozen solid in Greenland for 5 decades. The restoration took 10 years. 10 years of painstaking, obsessive, inch-by-inch work. New skins shaped to Lockheed's original contours. A new cockpit fitted with period-correct instruments, hydraulic systems rebuilt, landing gear reconstructed, electrical harnesses rewired. The team even tracked down original parts from other P-38s to keep as much of the airplane authentic as possible. And here's something that gets me every time. They kept the airplane's original data plate, that little stamped metal tag that identifies the airframe. So, even though so much of the airplane had to be rebuilt, she carries the same identity she had on that July day in 1942 when a young Army Air Forces pilot put her down on the ice. On October 26, 2002, at Middlesbrough Bell County Airport in Kentucky, Glacier Girl flew again. Test pilot Steve Hinton strapped in, fired up those two Allisons, and lifted that airplane off the runway. 60 years after she had last been in the sky, the crowd went absolutely silent during the takeoff roll, and then erupted when the wheels left the ground. I talked to a fellow at an air show once who was there that day. He said the sound of those two Allisons winding up was something you felt in your chest, and when the wheels came up, grown men were crying, not sniffling, crying, because they knew what it took to get that airplane back in the air. Glacier Girl went on to become one of the most famous warbirds in the world. She appeared at air shows across the country, painted in her original markings, those distinctive twin booms and that shark mouth nose art that makes a P-38 unmistakable. Every time she flew, she carried a story that most people couldn't believe even when they were looking right at her.
Think about what this restoration represents. Not just the mechanical achievement, though that alone is staggering. It's the stubbornness. The refusal to let go. Pat Epps and Richard Taylor spent years and a fortune just trying to find the airplane. Roy Schaffner spent a decade rebuilding something that came out of the ice in pieces. Hundreds of craftsmen, engineers, and volunteers donated thousands of hours, all for one airplane. And why? Because that airplane matters. Every warbird that still flies is a piece of history that breathes. You can read about the P-38 in a book. You can see one in a museum behind a velvet rope. But when you stand on a flight line and watch Glacier Girl taxi past, those superchargers whining and those counter-rotating propellers pulling her forward, you understand something that no book can teach you. That airplane carried someone's son into combat, and someone brought it home. The other aircraft from the Lost Squadron, as they came to be called, are still down there. 5 P-38s and 2 B-17s resting under the Greenland ice, sinking a little deeper every year. There have been discussions and plans over the decades to recover more of them, but the cost and logistics are enormous. Glacier Girl remains the only one brought back. She changed hands over the years and has been maintained by people who understand what she is. Not just a warbird, a recovered piece of American history that by all rights should have been lost forever. The research for today's segment came from the Greenland Expedition Society's records, the Lost Squadron Project archives, and coverage in Air and Space Magazine and Warbirds International. You can find more about the show at radiohangar.com. That's all for today. Go find a P-38 at your next air show and listen to those Allisons. You'll understand why they went 268 feet down to bring her back.